Hi, everyone, and thank you for tuning into the Becker's Healthcare Podcast Series. I am Brian Zimmerman, the custom content editor with Becker's Hospital Review. Today, I am pleased to be joined by Paul Griffiths, the General Manager of Digital Health Solutions at Proficient, a global digital consultancy. Paul works with hospital and health plan executives to combine strategy and technology that heighten consumer experiences, operational efficiencies, and individual care. Paul, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
My pleasure.
Great. So let's dive right in then. The first question I have for you is, why is placing an emphasis on revenue recovery often short-sighted?
I think that the biggest challenge that we're seeing in 2020 from a healthcare perspective is obviously COVID. COVID has dramatically reshaped the U.S. landscape for healthcare. If we're looking at, frankly, how hospitals are trying to manage their way through this pandemic, if you wind back a few months in May, there was maybe a sense that we were kind of rounding the corner. Now here we are. COVID cases are now on the rise again. And I think this idea that we're going to get back to a certain point in time is unfortunately short-sighted. At the beginning of COVID, especially for the areas that were hardest hit, there was this sense that we were going to have to perhaps adapt quickly, but that we could kind of figure out how to get people back in the door once we kind of got over that first wave. And I think now we recognize that with this fall winter surges being so pronounced, there isn't a point at which we can safely go back and say, yep, it's going to be like 2019 again as of March or April. And so myself and some colleagues have spent the last few months really trying to get a better understanding of what is going to make healthcare organizations successful in the face of not only this pandemic, but in potential future disruptions. And I think moving away from this idea of recovery, which implies that we're going back to something that worked, to revenue resilience, that we're building systems and processes and relationships that will allow us to withstand change, that mindset seems critical. And in fact, I've spent the last 6 months working through some really important principles and trying to better understand what organizations can do to be successful and looking for, frankly, just bright spots of organizations who have taken investments that have worked. My perspective is really that we are living in a different time, and that if health systems want to adapt today and tomorrow and the future, those decisions all kind of look the same. And so I'm hopeful that coming out of this period, we'll end up with a more resilient system in the United States if organizations can take the right investments and really fund pilots and projects that lead to long-term lasting change.
Absolutely. I really appreciate that term, revenue resiliency. I think that will resonate with a lot of our listeners. And you mentioned as a piece of that, sort of building these strong relationships, and I imagine the patient experience is a part of building revenue resiliency ultimately. So in a health system, then who owns the patient experience?
Yeah, I think right now we are seeing this movement towards codifying a patient experience discipline within health systems. Some of our clients have actually created a patient experience officer with maybe some slightly different titles, but with this understanding that ultimately health systems now need to participate in creating experiences for patients that have just kind of meaningful outcomes. So in our work, we're always looking for where we can reduce the suffering of patients, and in particular, reduce any places in the patient experience that cause friction or cause patients perhaps to rethink their engagement. And I think health systems are so large and complex that even small amounts of changes, like 0.5% improvement in key metrics, can really drive disproportionate outcomes. So when we're living through a pandemic where perhaps we can't rely upon a good understanding of a funnel for elective surgeries, now what we need to do is understand how we can create a patient experience that can work in a world where we're seeing everyone perhaps in a clinic setting, and maybe in a world where now we're having a mix where we're sort of seeing patients. And I think that shift in thinking sometimes looks like an individual who kind of gets named. I think for organizations who haven't taken that step, it does look like a cross-functional team of clinical operations, IT, and marketing. And so I have a passion for making sure the healthcare marketers get a seat at that table, because it does seem like they have the most to say and the most experience on how to communicate with the communities that they serve. So for organizations that haven't codified patient experience into a single officer, there is this growing awareness that a cross-functional team is going to provide that. And so for the clients who are most successful at improving their patient experience, they are thinking about, what is the clinical experience going to be like? How are we supporting that through technology? And how do we know that we're saying the right thing to the right patient at the right time? And that last part is often the part that organizations can forget. So I'm hopeful that these cross-functional teams will get the best out of all three of those disciplines going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to zero in, Ben, on the cross-functional team component of this. So why have these cross-functional perspectives become more important in healthcare business and finance decisions?
I think that we see that healthcare is going through this digital transformation now, largely because COVID has meant that face-to-face interactions have really changed. So previously, healthcare organizations were kind of dabbling with remote visits or virtual visits. Now what we've seen is nearly all of our clients in 2020 have seen 10, 20, sometimes 100x increase in virtual visits. So we've seen this kind of dramatic consumer shift. And this idea that we're going to change the way that patients and healthcare consumers interact with us demands that we have a coherent and organized response. At Proficient, our work is always thinking about end-to-end solutions. So thinking about strategy and execution and building sustainable programs that can support themselves. So we've seen this in other industries. The disruption that's happening in healthcare now is maybe not coming from financial realities as much as is being forced upon the industry. But this idea that we are having to adapt so quickly means that the healthcare business model is changing. And so when you change a business model, you need to understand the implications down to a financial reality. So I was really pleased that, for example, telehealth visits are getting funded in a completely different way. And that was a kind of quasi-governmental decision. So now that we have precedent for telehealth visits being funded at a level that is sustainable and kind of reflects the reality of the cost and the investment that health systems need to make, health systems can now plan on that going forward. So we're at an interesting time where so much has shifted so quickly that every health system who's thinking about 2021 and is in budget planning right now has to really bank on the fact that new features like telehealth are going to exist. So they've had to take a step back and think about their operating model. And I think that's really a unique opportunity for healthcare, which had been really stuck appeasing a lot of different interests, to take a step back and think, how do we deliver value to patients? What are the things that we must have? What are the most efficient ways of doing it? And that is really going to change the types of investments that healthcare organizations make. And that's going to change, frankly, their business and financial priorities. So the only way to do that, the only way to make these wholesale changes so quickly, is by getting cross-functional teams together and relying upon the clinical operations and the IT and the marketing groups to help the business execute on the vision and execute on the new plan and the new reality. So while there's so much unfortunate to be said about the current situation that healthcare systems find themselves in, it is really like we are going through 5 or 10 years of organizational change in a single year. And on the other side of that, I'm really hopeful that organizations can make some key commitments to this follow through on the digital transformation and be healthier at the end, or at least be more adaptable in the face of having to open and close facilities due to adverse health impacts like COVID.
Yeah, it sounds like that cross-functional team, that perspective is really essential for turning this big moment of disruption into that digital transformation, right? That positive digital transformation.
Absolutely.
And then I want to move again to talk more about, this is a dramatic transformation, and as health systems continue to navigate this situation, what are some common pitfalls that can arise as these organizations make big technology decisions?
We conducted a survey of healthcare organizations earlier this year and put that learning into a number of blog posts and actually some a white paper and some perspective that we're releasing shortly. We asked a really simple question. If you could turn back time, what would you do differently? Right? So if you could go back, knowing what you know now about the impact of COVID on health systems, what decisions would you make that would be different? And what we found is a number of key decisions that stood out. The one that stuck with me about technology decisions was that the organizations who were successful and the ones who struggled both pointed back to, man, if only we had made it some unified technology decisions. And when we dug into that, it really came down to technology is so critical for enabling the platforms that we can now communicate with patients with, right? So your telehealth visit platform, your web assets, your EMR, and all of these things now were suddenly critical. However, the decision of what tools to use and how they would interoperate was not something that many organizations had taken an investment in building a discrete strategy around. So if you used a variety of point solutions, which is a term that typically just means, you know, a single tool to solve a single problem, you had a brittle system when it came to trying to interoperate. Organizations that were happy with their technology decisions had taken some investment in rationalizing their technology portfolio, meaning they took a step back and said, let's make sure we have a strategy so we know what we're doing, that we can articulate that strategy, and we're making decisions based on that strategy. And it actually didn't matter what the strategy was. It wasn't that there was a clear bias towards, for example, organizations who built things themselves were vastly superior, or organizations who figured out how to buy the right set of tools were vastly superior. It actually didn't seem like the decision itself was as important as the commitment to making a coherent decision. And so from an investment standpoint, healthcare organizations who could take a step back and think about spend at a system level and rationalize spend at a system level and didn't fall into the trap of departments had a lot of latitude to make individual decisions, ended up with a better unified technology set than trying to manage a kind of confederacy of decisions. It's really important that healthcare organizations going forward are able to articulate how they're going to make their decisions and follow through. So this is a bit of a mental shift, but as we start thinking about what the next 3 to 5 years look like, if we're talking about investing more in the patient experience, if we're talking about building these cross-functional teams to adapt to totally new financial and business realities, then we need to take a similar step with our technology and really rationalize the portfolio of tools that we have and make sure we're betting on the right things. And that is frankly, a really great investment for healthcare organizations to make right now because we know that any decisions that allow organizations to interoperate and build strength and flexibility and adaptability in technology platforms are serving them today and are going to serve them in the years to come as we continue to face an uncertain future.
So then building on that technology unification piece and sort of circling back to the resiliency concept, what distinguishes organizations capable of weathering massive disruption from those that are less resilient? You know, what do they do differently?
Yeah, great question. We, you know, as I mentioned, some colleagues and I got really interested in this fundamental question of what would you do differently if you could turn back time. As we started to engage with leaders in the industry, we came away with maybe a little bit of a surprise in that, Ken, it was less about the individual decisions any system made and more about their commitment to making certain decisions. So from our perspective, the organizations who are capable of weathering this type of disruption made fundamental commitments to how they were going to interact with patients, how they were going to make it easy for physicians to practice. They made commitments on how they would fund pilots and have a plan to bring those to scale. We actually boiled down to 6 commitments that some of the research that we've done. If listeners are interested, you can visit our website at Perficient.com/healthcare and we'll kind of lay them out. But we realized it was much more about having a coherent story for how those decisions were being made. So I'll give you an example. I talked to a healthcare organization who had reached the point that they had outgrown all of these point solutions. So they had taken investments, they had outsourced their telehealth platform, for example, and they realized that they wanted to create a pilot to explore if it was feasible for them to own that experience. Well, that pilot happened to be right around when COVID was hitting. And so all of a sudden, this pilot, which really relied upon some goodwill within the organization, was being made ready for prime time. Because they had made a commitment to thinking about scale, they were able to know what to do, and they just accelerated the plans that they had laid out. And so that commitment to planning at scale is a commitment that served them when they realized that this pilot was not something that would be an exploratory pilot, but it was actually something that they were trialing to make sure that they could serve their clients at scale for a complete overhaul of their telehealth system. I think a second example is, we talked a little about the patient experience. It's really a commitment to look at the gaps and the seams in the healthcare experience and make tough decisions about how to eradicate them. So it is common for healthcare organizations, for example, if you have a physician group and you have a health system and there's a relationship, but for example, something as simple as billing is very confusing for a patient to understand. Taking a step back and auditing your experience from the patient point of view really gives organizations dramatically different insights. So we've had clients who, because they were committed to thinking through the patient experience, they would just start mapping out all the things, all the interactions that they would have with patients and how they wanted the patients to feel, what they wanted the patients to do, and what was the next step. And just by writing that down and saying, this is the idealized patient experience, we could go back and help them audit the places that frankly didn't live up to that expectations. And these were not necessarily big investments. One of the simplest ones we found was, you know, for a cancer service line, the communication about appointments left patients feeling very uncertain and nervous. And what we realized is they just needed to write a better email template. And that actually helped patients understand when they should show up for appointments, and it was clear and they didn't feel penalized if they had a change or miss an appointment. Just that little change in communications really made patients feel so much more at ease. It had a positive impact on their no-show rate. So their no-show rate went down. And those are the small changes that I talked about earlier, where if you get a kind of cross-functional view and you can think about, again, the clinical, the technical, and the communication side together, you can make these small adjustments that sometimes are not even big investments to make, but they yield disproportionate outcomes. Those are some examples of the types of commitments that organizations can make really to build this kind of resilience that we're seeing healthcare systems need.
So then with the patient experience in mind, Paul, I just have one final question for you, hoping here you could maybe take out your crystal ball for us. So how do you see healthcare consumer expectations evolving in the next couple of years?
I think we're tracking already with just consumer expectation changing this year. And so as I think about how things are going to change for the healthcare consumer in the next few years, I can really boil it down to three things. Consumers definitely want interactions that are easy, that especially this year, as we've seen traditional retail and hospitality businesses dramatically transform themselves, we as just general consumers are getting used to easy digital transactions. And I think that's going to be the new measurement. So if every other experience you have is great and your healthcare experience is lousy, it's going to become more noticeable. So I think the first thing is really investing in how do we make these digital experiences easy. I think the second is stickiness, that as a consumer, I now expect that you're going to remember me, know things about me, anticipate my needs, even if I can't articulate it. But if you think that, you know, I live in a house with a thermostat that tries to take a guess at what temperature I'm going to like it, I'm going to have increased expectations, especially now with telehealth, of what a healthcare system should be able to anticipate about me. So I think this idea of stickiness is something that consumers can't articulate, but they really appreciate it. And so this idea that healthcare systems are going to need to anticipate what the next best action is for a consumer is going to be critical. And the last thing is pervasiveness, that as a consumer, I want to be able to start something on my phone, finish it on my desktop, communicate through my watch, like whatever it is, that we don't, as consumers, we don't think about different modes or different parts of a business when we interact with it. And for healthcare, this is really tough. So part of the investment in a great patient experience, as I mentioned, is looking for the seams and trying to reduce them. I think that the opportunity or challenge is going to become more pronounced because we're living in a world where so many people are working from home, so many people have daily lives have been disrupted, that the world has kind of gotten a little flatter. And we as consumers are just not going to have as much patience when we can't do what we want in the way that we want. So this idea of pervasiveness is going to require health systems to be able to create a great experience on a mobile device or through a call center or through their portal. I think this kind of consistency of experience becomes really, really critical so that consumers aren't seeing the kind of parts of the system that have cracks in them. So that would be my summary of easy, sticky, and pervasive. That's what healthcare consumers want out of a healthcare experience in the next few years.
Absolutely. Paul, thank you so much for taking the time and sharing your expertise with our listeners today.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate everyone who is working to try to make the healthcare system in the United States better. And I just want to say thank you for me. Thank you for my colleagues at Proficient. We absolutely think the work that you do is incredibly important. And obviously, I've given my career to helping people like you. So I just want to say thank you very much for everything you've done.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Paul. And I'd also like to thank Proficient as well for sponsoring this episode. Listeners, you can tune into more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com.